How's it going, people? These are the worst date movies ever. My name is Greg Knox. If you have not done so already, please like, share, and subscribe and all that good stuff. We've got some awesome episodes in the series so far. If you've not listened to them, please check them out. We've got episodes on August Underground, on Cargo 200, and on Hostel, and on Saw, which is a show I did with Tom Cannon, which was a lot of fun. So yeah, they're worth listening to if you've not done so. And I thank you very much for listening to this episode, which is the third of my Lionsgate series. And it's on The Devil's Rejects by Rob Zombie. Now, Rob Zombie is a director who I have, let's say, an interesting history with. He's not a director whose work that I've liked a lot in the past, but it was fun kind of going back through his back catalogue because I haven't seen some of these films in like 15 years nearly. So yeah, you'll see kind of how my opinion on his films have changed over time. Now, with this episode, I wanted to do something slightly different. First of all, you'll see that it's a bit longer than some of my recent episodes. In terms of, this is done less in a kind of fully scripted format. I wanted to do this more as just a kind of stream of consciousness, kind of like a ramble type thing. So hence why it's quite long, because I don't know if you guys have noticed, but I ramble quite a lot when I talk. So if this is a style that you guys like, then I will kind of do it for more episodes like this in the future. But if not, then fuck it, I'll go back to scripting it. It's, you know, it's fine. It's up to you. It's obviously what you guys think is the most important here. Also, I'm not really going to be talking about The Devil's Rejects in that much detail. What I'm going to be doing instead is, this is a bit more of an experiment, and hopefully it's a fun one, in that this is the trial of Rob Zombie. So as someone who has not liked Mr. Zombie's films in the past, what I thought I would do is kind of go through some of the more common criticisms that are made of his films, shall we say, that not just me, but other people have had, and kind of go through, well, do I think that that's fair or not? And yeah, hopefully you guys like it. It's very different. It's hopefully a lot of fun. So yeah, stick around for that one. If you're a fan of Rob Zombie, maybe don't listen to this show. Although, hey, fuck it, maybe do listen to this show. You know, hey, it's fine. You know, having different opinions is not a bad thing. But yeah, if you are going to expect me to say how much I love Rob Zombie and all his films are great, you're going to be a bit disappointed. Sorry, guys. In terms of disturbing content, Devil's Rejects is slightly disturbing. I don't think it's the most disturbing film in the world, but as always, if there are certain subject matters that are likely to upset you, as always, kind of tread with warning when it comes to my show, particularly as, you know, it's called The Worst Date Movies Ever. You should kind of know what you're expecting by now. But also, and this is kind of more important, I would say, as always, even though I'm not going to be talking about The Devil's Rejects in, well, a lot of detail at all, really, in terms of its plot, because its plot is really, really easy, there are, as always, going to be spoilers, so watch out for those. And with that out of the way, let's get on with the show. Let the trial begin. Devil's Rejects was directed by Rob Zombie and came out in 2005. Rob Zombie, unlike James Wan and Eli Roth, who I talked about on the previous two shows, he didn't need to direct horror movies. He was already famous. He obviously, as everyone who's listening to the show knows, he was the singer of the band White Zombie. And then after they disbanded in the 90s, he started his solo career. And then a couple of albums into that, he made his first film. Now, for editorial balance, as I've titled this show, The Trial of Rob Zombie, I need to kind of give a quick kind of history lesson into sort of my relationship with Rob Zombie, because it's pretty, it's mixed, shall we say. So the first metal CD that I ever bought was Astro Creep 2000 by White Zombie. They were actually, I think, the first metal band that I ever really, really got into. And I really like Rob Zombie's first solo album. I think his second solo album is pretty good as well. Not as good as the first one, but it's still, got some songs on it that I still listen to this day. And not really kept up with his solo career after that. Not for any particular reason. I think I just moved in a bit of a different direction. But I remember quite vividly, I was on Blabbermouth. If anyone who likes metal knows that site. I was on it at the time, and I vividly remember it was the very, very early 2000s, and I read this article on there that Rob Zombie wanted to make, he wanted to make his first horror film, and I was like, oh, wow, this is actually really, really cool, because anyone who knows Rob Zombie, who's listened to his music, knows that, similar to Eli Roth, although in a different way, he really, really loves horror films. Like, horror films are sampled all over White Zombie and his solo material. So yeah, I thought, okay, this is actually a really, really cool idea, and he has a very, very deep knowledge of horror films. So I thought, okay, this is cool. And also, very interestingly enough, I mean, another thing that I'd seen him do is he'd done the hallucination sequence in Beavis and Butthead Do America, which is awesome, and I think is probably the highlight of that film. So I really liked the idea of him making a horror movie to begin with. Now, it took me a long time to watch House of a Thousand Corpses, but I saw The Devil's Rejects in 2008, and I hated it. I absolutely hated it with a passion that I'm going to go into kind of when I talk about the movie itself in more detail. But from there, for whatever reason, that film immediately kind of put me on the back foot when it comes to kind of dealing with his other films. And when I had watched them kind of previously, it was kind of like through the lens of, oh, well, I hated The Devil's Rejects. When I saw House of the Thousand Corpses, I didn't really like that either. And then it was a case of, okay, didn't really like Halloween. Halloween 2 kind of got issues with it, and then 31, and then, yeah. So I kind of was at the point of immediately hating Rob Zombie's films. And when I did the Lament configuration with Rhea Fend, she really likes Rob Zombie's films. She thinks they're awesome. She really likes Sherry Moon Zombie. And at times what would happen is, like, we would have this diametrically opposed viewpoint to his films, and it was quite interesting. It wasn't like a personal thing. It was sort of more of a banter situation, shall we say. But yeah, the fact that I've now kind of rewatched all his films and I'm now doing a show on Rob Zombie is a bit weird, considering anyone, as I said, who listened to The Lament Configuration would have assumed, well, I hate Rob Zombie, which, yeah, it's not exactly black and white, let's put it that way. But yeah, so I've rewatched all his films, and obviously I'm going to talk about them right now. So Rob Zombie, as a director, he is, of all the directors that I've talked about on the series so far, he is by far the most Marmite. So the people who love him, they really, really love him. And the people who hate him really, really, really hate him. There isn't a lot of in between. Now, personally, having seen all his films now, I would say when he's good, he's very, very good. And there are things that he's really, really good at that I'm going to go into on the show a bit more detail later on. But in terms of his style, one of the things that's been said about him is, for the most part, a lot of his films all have the same kind of tropes, the same kind of characteristics. I'm going to go through those for you guys now. So the most well-known thing about Rob Zombie is that he loves 70s films, particularly 70s kind of horror films and exploitation films. But unlike Eli Roth, he actually does something slightly different with them. So Rob Zombie's biggest influences would be directors like Sam Peckinpah, particularly The Wild Bunch. Something like Bonnie and Clyde. Just look at the ending of The Devil's Rejects, for example. or the films of Wes Craven. So I'm thinking Last House on the Left or The Hills Have Eyes. But obviously the director that he likes the most is Toby Hooper, because he's ripped off a lot of Toby Hooper, particularly very, very early in his career. I'm thinking obviously of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But when you look at a film like House of a Thousand Corpses, there's a lot of Toby Hooper in there as well. And speaking of Toby Hooper and Texas Chainsaw Massacre, what Zombie likes to do is he likes to open his films with a voiceover, like in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, see Devil's Rejects, or alternatively, he likes to open with a very, very pithy quote. So something like 31 has a Kafka quote at the start. Whether it's an actual Kafka quote or not, I don't know. What it has to do with 31, fuck knows. But yeah, they're all there, though, anyway. His films also generally take place in the 70s. There's one or two exceptions for that, but for whatever reason, he likes setting his films in the 70s. In terms of how his films look, with the exception of House of a Thousand Corpses, his camera work is generally handheld. You can tell that it's handheld because it's generally a bit shaky. In terms of action set pieces, it gets a bit more shaky and it can be a bit more of an issue to watch, but generally that's kind of how it's done. Also, the editing of his films, the editing itself can be a lot faster during these set pieces. His editor is Glenn Garland, who has been his editor for basically his whole career since The Devil's Rejects onwards. What he tends to do as well is, I've noticed during scenes where there's violence, he tends to film very close and there's a lot of fast editing, maybe to hide effect shots. So his effects artist is Wayne Toth, who does all his special effects art makeup in all his films. One of the things he's known for, maybe not so much in his later films, but in Devil's Rejects, and especially in House of a Thousand Corpses, is what he does is when he has news reports, or like in House of a Thousand Corpses, there are these weird like character monologues or vignettes, I guess. And he films those in kind of grainy footage, like grainy 16mm footage that looks obviously very different and deliberately sort of downgraded. So that's kind of an interesting thing that he does. Also, you may notice if you watch a lot of Rob Zombie films, he loves using slow motion. There is so much slow motion in his films. There's one of his films, it's actually Free From Hell, where he uses so much slow motion that it's actually ridiculous, that it was almost like Zack Snyder levels of using like slow motion. It's quite funny. Also, in The Devil's Rejects and also in Halloween, I believe, he uses screen wipes to transition between scenes. I thought that was quite interesting. In terms of the characters and the dialogue themselves, Rob Zombie is known for using a lot of what can be described as Tarantino-esque dialogue, particularly characters that he clearly really likes who go on long monologues, for example, Captain Spaulding or Otis, or in 31, Doomhead, Richard Brake's character goes on these sort of long monologues that don't seem to serve any purpose. As I said, when Tarantino does it, it works really well. Not sure why it doesn't work as well in Rob Zombie's films, but anyway, that's kind of where that trope comes from. Also, like Tarantino, what his characters tend to do is either quote directly or indirectly from other movies that Zombie likes, clearly, or characters in films will just talk about old films and kind of old film stars and kind of how much they like them. So in Halloween 2, Brad Dourif's character, the sheriff, will talk about Lee Marvin and how great Lee Marvin is randomly. Things like that. The other thing that Rob Zombie is known for is his dialogue contains a lot of swearing, especially fuck. There are literally some sort of parts of his films where literally every other word that the characters say is fuck or shit or things like that. It's almost a joke. Basically, it becomes like sort of Reservoir Dogs levels of kind of characters saying fuck. It's, yeah, pretty funny. Also, characters seem to, when they're not saying fuck, or even when they are saying fuck, they seem to all talk about their dicks, or having sex, or fucking different animals, or sticking things up their asses, and stuff like that. It's all very, very ridiculous. Like, literally, people just constantly talk about sex. Now, Rob Zombie writes up the scripts for all his films, so that clearly says something about Rob Zombie, clearly. Another thing that's interesting slash kind of, well, you know, is that all or most of the characters in Rob Zombie's films are white trash. They are rednecks, they're hillbillies, or whatever you want to call them. These are lower class sort of southern people, shall we say, particularly in sort of The Devil's Rejects, 31, all those kind of films. To be honest, even in the Halloween films, he managed to get a lot of white trash stuff in there. So clearly he likes white trash characters. So, yeah, it's almost to the point of absurdity that he likes these characters. These characters seem to argue a lot. People can't just have sort of normal conversations. People, when they're not talking about sex, they're having arguments, sometimes to the point of violence. It seems to happen in The Devil's Rejects a lot. All the characters in his film seem to overact. Well, maybe not all of them, but certainly the main characters all seem to have been given the encouragement to just act as over the top as possible, bar a couple of exceptions in sort of his more mature films. But yeah, certainly in his films like Devil's Rejects, yeah, they all seem to overact a lot. Another thing that happens a lot in his films are, because they're sort of exploitation-y type films, there's a lot of female nudity. Not his wife. His wife doesn't get naked, but a lot of the kind of female supporting characters all seem to get naked at one point or another. Not really suggesting anything with that. I just thought it was interesting. In terms of actors, as everyone knows, his wife appears in all his films. More on her in a minute. Apart from his wife, interestingly, all the people that he actually cast in his films, they actually look like real people that you would get on the street. So there's no issue where everyone in a film looks like they're from like an Abercrombie and Fitch catalogue. We don't even have Abercrombie and Fitch in the UK, I don't think. But yeah, that's the general comparison. And quite interesting thing as well as putting his wife in all his films, one of the lead characters in his films always seems to look like him. So Otis looks like Rob Zombie. Michael Myers, when he's an adult, looks like Rob Zombie. Jeffrey Daniel Phillips, who appears in 31 and in Free From Hell, looks a lot like Rob Zombie because he's got long hair and he's got a beard. Anyway, my point is there's always a character that seems to look a lot like him. Also, not to sort of make this part last for too long, there are parts in his films that are clearly meant to be funny and used for levity, more on that in a minute, or there are parts that are just for shock value. He seems to have a thing for clowns. Clowns seem to appear a lot in his films. In all his films, there's a scene where there's an old horror film on the TV. So this is Zombie playing tribute to these old classic horror films, like, you know, ones with Bela Lugosi from Universal, all those types of films will be playing in his films in one way or another. Also, every single film that he's made always has like this 70s classic rock soundtrack. So Devil's Rejects is a great example of this. So the opening track is by like Altman Brothers Band. You've got Terry Reid, Buck Owens, there's a couple of Rush songs in his back catalogue. Obviously the main band that is closely associated with is Lynyrd Skynyrd. There's several Lynyrd Skynyrd songs scattered throughout his filmography, the most obvious one being Free Bird at the end of Devil's Rejects. And yeah, I think actually those work really well. It's, again, a bit of a Tarantino thing to do, but I don't mind it in this case. Another thing that I should probably say, again, we're trying to kind of tell you guys kind of what the general tropes of his films are. And it's not really meant as like a point to kind of pay criticism, but it's just, I guess, worth pointing out. His films are generally violent, although weirdly not House of a Thousand Corpses and, oddly enough, not Devil's Rejects. Those films are nowhere near as violent as the rest of the films in Rob Zombie's sort of filmography. The Halloween films are much more violent than Devil's Rejects. 31 is violent to like a ridiculous extent. Like Free From Hell is much more violent than both House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects. So his films are known for being violent, even when they're kind of not, is more my point. Also, ironically for someone like me, one of the things that I noticed about his films is they are too long for the most part. House of a Thousand Corpses is not too long, but there's reasons for that. Devil's Rejects is about 2 hours long, but it doesn't feel that long. But the rest of his films are just way too long. Like, Halloween is 2 hours long. That's far too long. Halloween 2 is about 2 hours long. Again, way, way too long. Even his films that are really short, like Haunted World of El Super Beasto, that's only 77 minutes, but even that is too long because it's just really boring. I really don't like that film. So yeah, his films are just ill-disciplined, I guess, in that way that Quentin Tarantino's films are accused of being ill-disciplined as well. So yeah, it's he needs a better editor, is more my point. So that is what a Rob Zombie film is like. And it's at this point I should probably go into House of a Thousand Corpses. So House of a Thousand Corpses came out in 2003, and it was his first film. It was meant to be released through Universal. Story goes that he came to Universal and he said, I want to collaborate with you on this haunted house attraction at your theme park. Eventually, that became an idea for a film. He put together the film. He showed it to them, and it was basically going to get an NC-17 rating, and then Universal decided that they no longer wanted to make the film, and he ended up buying the film himself, ended up selling it to Lionsgate, and then Lionsgate released it. So House of a Thousand Corpses is very similar to Cabin Fever by Eli Roth in that it's got that first film feel. So it's quite clear from watching House of a Thousand Corpses what Rob Zombie's influences are. So there's a lot of Toby Hooper in there. I mean, the one that people talk about the most is the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but you could quite easily argue you've got the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 in there as well, particularly because you've got Bill Moseley in there. You could also argue the Funhouse, particularly in the visuals. It definitely reminds me of the Funhouse in a lot of ways. And also Eaten Alive. It's got that kind of vibe going on in it as well. And also you've got things like Spider Baby, which is sort of ironic because, again, you've got Sid Haig in there. You've got the old dark house. Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff going on in there. And it's all pretty obvious. I like the way the film looks. This is sort of the outlier, apart from Lords of Salem, in Rob Zombie's filmography. This one, it's got a very different feel, a very different tone, a very different style compared to the rest of the films that came afterwards. I don't know why that is. I don't know if that's because he didn't really have his voice yet, or he wasn't really sure what he wanted to do, or he had a very specific idea for the film. But yeah, it does have, like, it's weird because I watched this and then I kind of watched all his other films and I kind of went back to this. So I reminded myself of what it was like before I did this review. And yeah, it's so different. It's very, very different. The one thing I'd say about it is it doesn't have that kind of gritty, sort of realistic Western style kind of tone that all most of his other films have. It's very goofy, I would say. It's very kind of fun. It's, I guess, kind of meant to have that kind of amusement park feel, shall we say. It's very colourful as well. I kind of appreciated that. So I was surprised watching the film kind of how different the colour palette is compared to the rest of his filmography. I was like, oh my god, you can actually see reds in there. Awesome. And some of the stuff that people don't like about Rob Zombie's films aren't really in there. I mean, you've got some dialogue that's very typical of the rest of his films, but it's not so much. The main thing about this that's different, though, is that this is the first film that he did that tried to have kind of what I would call quote-unquote normal people in it. So the story of House of a Thousand Corpses is you've got these two couples, they're driving around America, they end up at the roadside attraction owned by Captain Spaulding, Sid Haig's character. they then find out about the legend of Dr. Satan, which is such a Rob Zombie name, it's ridiculous. And then they end up picking up this hitchhiker who turns out to be Baby, Sherry Moon Zombie's character, and then they end up at the house of the Firefly family, and it's, yeah, very kind of, well, I mean, it's pretty obvious that it's a bad place, just from the production design alone, but, you know, these couples, you know, their car breaks down, they can't leave, so they're stuck there for a while, and then things happen, and then obviously, you know, they get captured and kind of lots of gory shit happens. And yeah, that's pretty much it. It's a very, very simple story. In a way, what I would say about the film is I've mentioned that it was edited down. Now, one of the things I mentioned earlier is that the film was meant to be released by Universal. It was going to get an NC-17 rating, so Rob Zombie had to edit the film down so that it was going to be released with an R rating. This is very important in America if you want to make money and things of that nature. So it's actually the only film of his that doesn't feel too long. It's been edited down to like normal size, but in editing it, there's a lot of very, very strange kind of transitions. This film has a lot of vignettes where you'll have characters just talking at the screen in between what's going on in the film, and particularly in like the last third, things just seem to happen just out of the blue without any kind of transitions, I guess, from scene to scene. Like, yeah, it's very weird. Anyone who's seen the film will kind of know what I'm talking about. There's some cool visuals in there that are very, very different. And I would say that Rob Zombie has a lot of ideas, but the film, for many reasons, like I mentioned, is kind of incoherent. And the best way that I've heard this film described, it's basically an everything plus the kitchen sink film, which is very apropos, I think, because it's literally, you know, all his influences, anything that he wants to do in a film, it's all out there on screen. But it's not without merit. Like I said, it's not nasty. The film is very goofy, as I mentioned. It's sort of, even characters who are very nasty in The Devil's Rejects, like Otis, they're not as nasty. Otis looks very different as well. He's meant to be like an albino, I think, in this. And yeah, he just is very cartoonish. But, and this is kind of the key element that kind of ties into The Devil's Rejects, the main thing about this film is, as I mentioned, it's the only film with normal people in it, at least that he made for a while. It's very clear that Rob Zombie doesn't really care for these normal people. They're not really given a lot of depth, if anything. In fact, if anything, they're kind of annoying. I mean, Rainn Wilson's all right, he's kind of likable, but the other characters, they're just not particularly very interesting. One character, Josh, is actually quite annoying. They're not hateful people. They're not people that, oh my god, I actually want these people to die or anything like that, but they're not really very sympathetic. His sympathies clearly lie more with the Firefly family, because they're given a lot more kind of stuff to do. Like, he clearly likes Otis, he clearly likes Baby, he clearly likes Captain Spaulding. Captain Spaulding is the best character in this film, and he's not in it for long enough, unfortunately. But yeah, the couple of scenes that he is on screen, he is very good. He's, yeah, the best character in both this and The Devil's Rejects, actually, I would say. But yeah, him not really liking his protagonists is a problem, because I don't really care, like, when they get captured and all this weird stuff gets done to them, like Rainn Wilson gets turned into a fish boy, which is very silly. He would never do anything like that in any of his other films. But still, it's like he really doesn't care that much. He clearly cares more about the Firefly family, and then that obviously makes more sense when you go to Devil's Rejects. Also, the police in the film are actually quite good as well. Tom Towles, from Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, he's in this as sort of the sheriff. He's the Sheriff Wydell in this film, and he's very good for the 20 or 30 minutes or so that he's in the film. He's actually not in the film for long enough. He was actually very good. He could have been like an interesting counterpoint to the Firefly family, and that's what you get in The Devil's Rejects. So yeah, I mean, if you've not seen it, I do kind of recommend it just as a curiosity, because like I said, it is fun. but it's kind of disposable. But yeah, it's all right. It's not the worst thing you'll ever see. But I think The Devil's Rejects is a better film. And The Devil's Rejects is very, very different, as we will talk about now. So I should probably go into the story of The Devil's Rejects itself before we start the trial of Rob Zombie. So the story of The Devil's Rejects is actually very, very simple. So the police come to the Firefly family compound, police led by Sheriff Wydell, who's played by William Forsythe. They are hunting the Firefly family for various murders. I think they quote 75 murders. Why it took them that long to sort of send the police over to try and arrest them, I don't know, but they do. And then there's this big shootout, and Otis and Baby escape, and they arrange to meet up with Captain Spaulding at a motel. Basically, Captain Spaulding is late arriving at the motel, so Otis and Baby have to basically try and find somewhere to hide out. There's a traveling band of musicians staying at the hotel. They basically torture and kill all of them. Captain Spaulding finally turns up, and then they arrange to meet up with another member of their extended family, who's like a pimp. He's played by Ken Foree from Dawn of the Dead. And they meet up with at his place, and basically the whole time, this Sheriff Wydell is basically planning to kind of, you know, arrest them, but then it actually turns out that he has sort of worse plans for them, because they killed his brother in the previous film. And then, you know, there's torture, and then there's the big sort of shootout at the end. And then that's it. The story of this film is very, very simple. There's not really a lot to it. All the kind of interesting stuff in The Devil's Rejects is kind of in how you interpret the film, whether you like it or don't like it, as I'm going to go into right now. So before I start the trial itself, which is basically mostly criticisms of Rob Zombie, I should say that there are a lot of aspects of this film that I think are really good and that I wanted to kind of put over to start off with. So first of all, the film has a certain energy to it that a lot of other films kind of don't have. So this film, even though it's like nearly 2 hours long, it doesn't feel boring. It always kind of feels like it's going somewhere, even though the story, as I've said, not a lot really happens in it. And you've got kind of the interesting kind of point counterpoint, where you've got like the Firefly family, and then you've got the sheriff, and you've got kind of those two different sort of groups of characters, kind of, and what happens to them sort of as the story goes on. And that means that to me, the story always felt like it was going somewhere, and that it always felt like it was on the front foot. So that was really good. I think a lot of the visuals in this are pretty cool. I quite like the cinematography in this film. A lot of people hate the cinematography in The Devil's Rejects for some reason, but I quite liked sort of the, I guess, overly bright sort of desert colours. Like, the desert itself almost felt like a character in the film itself, and the sun as well, because it was just so bright. So that, I kind of thought, was interesting. I mean, it's better than a lot of the kind of washed out kind of grey or green or browns that we got at this period in sort of horror film history. So, yeah, I appreciated that. Also, the guy does know how to put together set pieces. I mean, before he became a film director, he was a music video director. So I would say in this film, there are 3 or 4 really, really good sort of montages over credits or before the end credits. Obviously, the most obvious one is the shootout at the end, that's set to Free Bird by Lynyrd Skynyrd, where he puts images together very well behind music. It's just something that he's sort of really good at. I don't know. I can't really explain it very well. But yeah, he's very good at that, and that works really well in this film. And I wouldn't go as far as to say the film is bad, but the film does have issues, and hence why I'm doing the show the way I'm doing it. It's a little bit fun. It's a little bit different. I hope that people like it. So there are 5 things that Rob Zombie is criticized for by people who don't like Rob Zombie. And I thought I would kind of cover those sort of main 5 criticisms on the show today, and that's hence why I'm doing the trial. So without further ado, the first one of these, and this is sort of the lowest hanging fruit of the criticisms, is that he casts his wife in every film that he makes, and that he generally uses the same actors in all his films. Now, yes, Sherry Moon Zombie is not a very good actress. I think everyone will kind of agree with that. In House of a Thousand Corpses, she's definitely the worst thing in it because of what she's being asked to do. So she, as far as I know, I don't know her personally. I've not seen any interviews with her. From what Rhea would always tell me, she's apparently a really nice person. I'm sure that she is. She's not a very good actress, though. And as far as I know, she hadn't been in anything before House of a Thousand Corpses. And she's being asked to give, like, this sort of over-the-top performance, and she just comes across as really annoying. Like, there's this laugh that she does, which is just, it just cuts through you, like, when you're watching these films. It's just, yeah, not great. And she's just using this kind of, well, I know her character's called Baby, but it's like this almost high-pitched sort of baby-talky voice, which is just awful. It's really, really horrible. Like, if he wanted to put his wife in, you know, like, I get, obviously, you know, it's his wife. If he wants to put his wife in his films, that's fine. They're his films. You know, he doesn't have to answer to anyone. He can just put her in the films if he wants to, but not in a leading role. Like, you could have put her in, like, a supporting role, or you could have put her in, like, a cameo or something like that. I don't know. She doesn't need to be one of the lead characters in the film. She's less annoying in The Devil's Rejects. She's slightly annoying, but it's definitely an improvement over House of a Thousand Corpses. And what I'll say is, while she never got a lot better, she was a lot more tolerable in films that Rob Zombie made after this, where he wasn't asking her to give, like, these over-the-top performances. So in Halloween, she's all right. In Halloween 2, she's not actually in the film for very much, so she's kind of fine, really. Lords of Salem, she gives a very kind of muted performance, and again, didn't ruin the film for me. I thought she was perfectly fine in that film. In 31, again, she wasn't horrible. There are many issues with that film. She's not really one of them. And then Free from Hell, she's going back to doing the baby character, and again, she's giving the over-the-top performance, and there's issues with that. But look, what I'll say is, everyone agrees she's not a very good actress, but is it really, like, a deal breaker at this point? Like, it's kind of known that he's gonna put his wife in any film that he makes, so I don't know. I think it's just one of these things that it's just kind of, it's like, I can't believe I'm gonna make this comparison. It's sort of like animal cruelty in, like, cannibal films. It's just, yeah, it's there, and no, we probably shouldn't like it, but I think going on and on about it is kind of a bit redundant at this point. It's sort of like, yeah, it was, might have been an issue, like, you know, in the mid-2000s, but at this point it's like, are we really surprised? Come on now, let's talk about it. As I said, it's a bit of a low-hanging fruit, so I would say that while it is an issue, it's kind of just something that you have to accept if you're going to watch one of his films. Also, on a similar note to this, this is not a separate charge, this is kind of like charge 1A. Rob Zombie has been accused of stunt casting. Now, this is an interesting criticism, I would say, because it's not really a criticism that anyone else gets other than him, from what I've seen online. There are no reviews that I can pinpoint that I can actually directly quote with this, but essentially the criticism that Rob Zombie gets from certain people in the horror community is that he puts people in his films not because they're right for the character they're playing, but because it's, oh, it's this person from this 80s horror film who would have been at conventions and things like that, and it's so that horror fans could go, oh, I know this person. Now, that extends to a certain extent to, obviously, you've got Sid Haig and you've got Bill Moseley in kind of leading roles in this. And Ken Foree from Dawn of the Dead, he's sort of quite prominent in this. You've got Michael Berryman from The Hills Have Eyes. And William Forsythe, even, is sort of an actor who has appeared in films like Once Upon a Time in America and Raising Arizona and stuff like that. But even in, like, the roles that only appear in one scene, he uses actors who are from various sort of old TV shows or old horror films. In The Devil's Rejects, there's a scene where Captain Spaulding, he basically commandeers a woman's car, and the woman whose car he commandeers is played by PJ Souls, who's from Halloween and Carrie. So if you know who PJ Souls is, you'll see this and go, oh, that's her from Halloween, Carrie, whatever. Is this a bad thing, though? Because to me, this is a bit of a strange criticism, because at the end of the day, it's like, does it really matter that he is using people who are well known for being in sort of 70s and 80s films that he liked when he was growing up? I don't know. To me, as long as the person fits the role, it doesn't matter that much to me. I don't know if I'm oversimplifying this. Like, I have a bigger problem where you're watching a film and every character in it looks like they're straight out of a modeling catalogue. Like, everyone is really pretty. It's I've talked about this before in other shows. It's like, it's this was more of a thing in the 90s, like when you had Scream, and then you had, you know, I Know What You Did Last Summer and Urban Legend and Valentine and all these kind of films where it was whoever was hot on TV at the time in their sort of 20s and stuff, they all appeared in horror films. So now everyone has to be young and beautiful. Rob Zombie films are at least the antithesis of that, shall we say. So I don't have a problem with this at all. The only casting that I have an issue with, if you want to call it stunt casting, is Danielle Harris in Halloween, because Danielle Harris had already been in two films previously in the Halloween franchise as a different character. So the fact you're bringing her into this remake as a totally different character that was already played by someone else in the original, I don't know, that felt very deliberate to me. I don't know, something about that bothered me. And I guess, you know, people have complained, as people are known to do on the internet, complain about things, that in Halloween, for example, you'll have like these, you know, famous people from horror films just appear randomly, like Ken Foree's in that one, Sybil Danning's in Halloween in like one scene, Sid Haig appears in one scene in Halloween, and all this kind of stuff. But I don't know, it's a bit of an overblown criticism to me, as is the criticism that, again, comes up quite a lot, that he uses the same actors in all his films. So obviously we've already covered that his wife appears in all his films. And again, this isn't really a criticism. A lot of directors do this. There are many directors who are like auteurs, if you want to use that term, who use a lot of the same actors in all their films. So for literally, you just look throughout film history. I'm not even going to give examples, not even in kind of lead roles, even in like supporting roles. It might be a case of that, you know, you work with someone, you get on with them, and then you make another film and it's like, cool, we'll use them again. So again, sort of Sid Haig and Bill Moseley, obviously they appeared in several films, not just Firefly films, but in other films. More recently, this guy, Jeffrey Daniel Phillips, seems to have appeared in every single one of Rob Zombie's films since Halloween 2. Richard Brake has appeared in a few of his films since, again, Halloween 2. He has like an interesting role, shall we say, in Halloween 2, and then he became very prominent, and he's Doomhead in 31 and stuff like that. And it might be that he likes the way that they look, and it might be that they are very good at, you know, reciting his dialogue that he's written and things like that. So yeah, again, it's not really a fair criticism. It's not even really a criticism. I don't really understand it personally. In terms of sort of all these three charges, I would say, you know what, while his wife can't really act that well, it's not really fair. I mean, they're his films. If he wants to cast people in them, it's fine. That doesn't really negatively impact the film that much to me. So the second charge is around the dialogue in his films. Now, this one is a bit more of a issue to me. So Eli Roth has been called the Quentin Tarantino of horror, which I don't think is accurate. I would say Rob Zombie is the Quentin Tarantino of horror, in the sense that Quentin Tarantino, he is quite open about what many of his influences are. And he, if you watch a lot of his films, then it's very apparent, okay, he's trying to allude to this film, or he's quoting from this film. Rob Zombie does it in a different way. So the first thing I would say about Rob Zombie is he gives what I think of as like these Quentin Tarantino style monologues to characters that clearly he absolutely loves. So Captain Spaulding and Otis, he gives them all the kind of, you know, cool lines, if you will, that they recite in his films. Otis is a bit of a weird character, I will say that, in that he says some cool stuff, but a lot of it is just ranting and raving and doesn't really seem to be about anything in particular. But every now and again, he'll come out with like a really, really cool line, like, I'm a devil and I'm here to do the devil's work and stuff like that. And the other one that I mentioned is Doomhead in 31, which is very, very clearly meant to be this kind of Captain Spaulding sort of Otis character, like, oh, you know, he's really cool, and he's like, you know, giving this like 5 minute long speech, which, don't get me wrong, Richard Brake does kind of recite really well, but it feels very kind of like self-indulgent. Like Rob Zombie just really likes the way that this character sounds in his head when he's writing the film, so he lets them talk and talk for ages. And yeah, it's a bit self-indulgent, not gonna lie. But that's not the only way that he is similar to Tarantino. He's also similar to Tarantino in the way that he quotes other films that he likes in his dialogue. So I've already mentioned this earlier. It's worth kind of mentioning again. You can tell, like, it's a Rob Zombie film because characters will just start talking about old films. So I've already mentioned sort of in Halloween 2, you've got Brad Dourif, his character, just randomly talking about Lee Marvin. In Free From Hell, Otis and Richard Brake's character are having a full-blown conversation about Humphrey Bogart and James Cagney, something like that. And it's like, well, they don't really serve the film. They're not really serving the storyline. It's just these characters are just having a conversation. And if you are like me and you've watched a lot of films and you're cine literate, you can understand, oh, okay, I know what they're talking about. But to your average person, they're not going to have a fucking clue. Like in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, near the end of that film, again, Tarantino film, nothing to do with Rob Zombie, but like there's a section right near the end of that film where there's a voiceover given by Kurt Russell where he's talking about how Leonardo DiCaprio's character went to Italy and he made spaghetti westerns, and he's quoting all these different Italian directors who I know because I love Italian films, so I know who all these different directors are who he's talking about. But to like your common guy in the audience, they're going to be like, who Umberto Lenzi, who the fuck's that? So yeah, it's just all very like, oh, look how many films I've watched. I don't know. There's different ways of doing it to me. Also, we can't avoid the fact that Rob Zombie's dialogue does seem to be a lot of people saying fuck every other word. A constant stream of swearing, which I love swearing, don't get me wrong. I swear quite a lot. I don't swear as much as I used to. You know, I like a good swear word. I like saying fuck. It's fun. But when you've got characters who are saying it like a million times a film, it does get a bit boring after a while. It just doesn't become very clever. So it's just a bit redundant. It's not, yeah, it's not clever at all. It's just not great. Also, very curious thing here. A lot of the dialogue, when you've got these people talking to each other, people can't have normal conversations in a Rob Zombie film. It seems to be, if you're a guy and you're in a Rob Zombie film, you're going to talk about your dick at some point, or you're going to talk about having sex, or you're going to talk about having a wank, or even, you know, putting your dick in different things, different animals, putting things up your butt and stuff like that. It's just very kind of infantile. That's just kind of all everyone is reduced to in Rob Zombie films, is kind of, they just talk about sex all the time. Even in Halloween, right? One of the biggest issues I have with Halloween is that you've got Laurie Strode, who's meant to be this sort of virginal kind of pure character. And in the original, it's played by Jamie Lee Curtis. And, you know, she's not sexually active at all. She's a virgin. That's the whole point of that character. And Rob Zombie, when he introduces Laurie Strode in Halloween, he has her basically make some kind of crass sort of sexual remark to her mother about with a bagel. From what I remember of the film, she's talking about this guy, this older guy who works at a like store in town, and how he's a bit creepy. And she does something like with a bagel, like, and it's like immediately I'm thinking like, well, hang on a minute, like no, I'm not having this. So immediately that kind of put my back up. So that's problematic. Also, similar to Eli Roth, this is, you know, to me, I don't think this is that big of an issue. This is more of like a 2000s issue. You do have the F word, not that F word, the other F word, the R word and stuff like that. And yeah, I don't know, that bothers some people. So yeah, in terms of dialogue, look, some of the lines are cool, but dialogue is not Rob Zombie's strong point. So while he's got good actors and some cool actors, you know, reciting his dialogue, the actual dialogue itself is not sort of Shakespearean, let's put it that way. Then you've got the third charge, which is the tone in his films. So Rob Zombie, he really likes Toby Hooper. Toby Hooper has a reputation of putting really kind of weird, kind of strange humor in his films, to the point that it kind of undermines his films in a lot of ways. So a lot of it is sort of blackly comedic, but it becomes a problem when you're undermining the tone of your film that you're trying to generate, and then you've got some kind of weird shit going on. Or just dumb stuff, really. Stuff that's just ridiculous. And Wes Craven did this as well to a certain extent in Last House on the Left. Now, Last House on the Left, I've talked about this before, where Last House on the Left, the subject matter is very grim, and you've got, you know, these two girls being murdered and raped and abused, and it's all very horrible. And what they tried to do to alleviate kind of the horrible nature of that, shall we say, is they had the cops be ridiculously inept, and you'd have like these weird kind of atonal scenes where, like I mentioned, like the police, they're trying to get to the house where they think the girls are, and their car breaks down and they have to hitchhike, and they get a lift of this strange woman on a chicken truck, and one of the policemen falls off the track. I don't know. It's all very stupid. Let's put it that way. It's one of the things about Last House on the Left that doesn't work. It kind of needs to be in the film, and why it's there sort of makes sense, but it just doesn't work. Rob Zombie is quite similar in this way. So I realize I haven't really talked about The Devil's Rejects that much. He tries to do this in a couple of scenes in The Devil's Rejects. So one of the big issue with the film is in terms of the morality of the characters that we're meant to be rooting for. And then what happens is Otis has basically skinned one of the characters and sort of cut off their face, and he puts the face on his wife, the character's wife, whose face he has taken off. And you've got this woman who's basically been through this ordeal where she's been, you know, pretty much treated horribly, and she's left there basically to die, and she thinks that she's able to escape. So the cleaning lady comes and opens the door, and like she manages to escape, and she runs out, and she's got this face on her and all this kind of stuff. And what happens then is like she goes in the middle of the road, I guess kind of evoking sort of, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, because, you know, Rob Zombie loves evoking that film, everybody. And then literally what happens is almost like in a Final Destination kind of way, a truck just literally comes and just splats her in the middle of the road. And this is played for laughs. And that's just, yeah, I don't know. Something about that just felt very, very wrong to me. I was like, okay. And the worst scene in the film, though, And again, this kind of ties into my previous point about all knowing all this cool stuff and kind of about tone, is the scene with the film critic. Directors sometimes, I don't know why, it's certain directors, not all of them, have this thing where because critics don't like them, what they'll do is they'll try and put critics in their films and make them look bad in some way. So there's a scene in Devil's Rejects where, and okay, so you'll have to bear with me on this one. So one of the things about the Firefly family is all their pseudonyms are all aliases of Groucho Marx. Well, they're all characters played by Groucho Marx in the Marx Brothers films. So you've got Otis Driftwood, Rufus T. Firefly, Captain Spaulding, right? And it's just this thing. It's like a trivia point that would turn up on IMDb. It's not like remarked upon in the film. It's just a cool little thing that if you know, you know, but it's not important to the actual film itself. In this, it becomes a huge kind of plot point where Sheriff Wydell, he suddenly realizes, hang on, all these characters, they all have the same name as Groucho Marx characters, you know, and I need to investigate this. And he brings in the local film critic, who's this weird guy with a goofy mustache, and like, he's completely pompous and pretentious, and he's quoting all this random shit that kind of people aren't asking for in the film. And to me, it's like, hang on, so why is this? I don't know. I was confused. Like, why is this happening? This is just dumb. Like, first of all, you're making the fact that these characters have these certain names as an actual plot point, which is like, okay, you don't need to do that. That's a bit silly, but okay, fine. And then the way that they've kind of made the critic look, and his performance is all very hammy. And then you've got the fact that the critic then brings up that, oh, Elvis died just before Groucho did, and you know, the sheriff doesn't like that because he likes Elvis, and I don't know, it's just an excuse for him to, you know, throw some cool lines in there, I guess. I don't know, it's just very silly. And that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about in terms of tone, is that one of the things that Zombie's clearly trying to do is he's trying to evoke these kind of old films from the 70s, but there's certain things about them that he doesn't understand in terms of why they work. It's the same problem that I have with Eli Roth. It's like, it's one thing being a fan, but it's another thing being a fanboy. And it's kind of almost like a fanboy thing where it's like, okay, I love this film, I'm going to try and do my own version of that. And you don't really understand why that works at all. So in that regard, I would say he's also guilty. So, yeah, it's one thing, you know, you can have levity in your films. And don't get me wrong, there is one scene that works really, really well in that regard. And that's the Tutti fucking Frutti scene. That works so well because that is actually quite funny in the way that it plays out. And it actually made me like those characters, even though they'd done some horrible things. So that is fine, but it's more the other stuff that's a problem. So the fourth charge that I would levy against Rob Zombie, or that gets levied against Rob Zombie by other people, is the shock value aspects of his films. Now, tying into what I just said about the comedy that appears in his films, there's a scene in The Devil's Rejects involving Ken Foree and Michael Berryman where they're going to buy some chickens, and they buy some chickens from this local guy, and it descends into a conversation where the guy says, "You're not going to fuck these chickens, are you?" And all this kind of stuff, where it's like, okay, first of all, again, serves no purpose to the film whatsoever. It's like, why? The scene only is there as an excuse so that the sheriff can kind of, you know, stop Ken Foree and kind of go, well, you know, tell me where your family is, because I want to get them and you need to help me. You could do that in other ways. You don't need to have, like, this guy kind of accusing Michael Berryman of fucking chickens. Because, first of all, that's just really dumb. It's really stupid. Like, you know, the idea of someone fucking chickens is kind of funny, I guess, but it's like, okay, I don't know, did it need to be in there? And that kind of ties into stuff that has happened in other Rob Zombie films, where there are certain things or dialogue or scenes that are there clearly just to shock people. They don't serve any actual purpose. So there's that scene. In Halloween, when Michael Myers escapes from the asylum where he's being kept, how it happens is there's an orderly character who has just started and is made out to be really horrible in an earlier scene. And him and his cousin, basically, they rape this new female inmate. And I'm like, it's just really horrible, and it's just done for no reason whatsoever. I just didn't understand why it was there at all. It was just really horrible. And like, don't get me wrong, like, I can handle my shit in that regard. Like, I can watch really horrible stuff. You know, I've talked about it quite a lot in this show, actually. But when it came to that, it was a bit of a problem, because it's just so out of nowhere. And it's like, you're making Halloween. Like, Halloween, this is not Last House on the Left. This is not, like, I don't know, Hills Have Eyes. It's Halloween. It's a total different type of film. So that felt very out of place. Also felt out of place is in Halloween 2. So you've got Richard Brake. He's an ambulance driver. And him and his colleague are driving Michael Myers' dead, presumably dead body, although it's not really, obviously, fuck, I mean, it's Halloween, you kind of know what you're getting into with that, but they're driving him to the hospital, to the morgue, presumably. And they're having this conversation about how one of the dead girls, how he thought she was really hot, and how he would fuck her corpse because she was so hot, even though she was dead. And again, it's just, it's so, like, I don't know, it's just things like that just really bother me, because it's just, it's so out of place. It's so pointless, because literally these people are just having a conversation in ambulance. They could talk about anything. Like, one of the things I would say about Rob Zombie is his characters are incapable of having normal conversations. Basically, all the conversations are either people swearing at each other or talking about sex in some way. They're the only conversations that he knows how to write. Like, people can't just go, oh, how's your day? How are things with your family back home? No, it's, that dead girl, she's really hot. I'd like to fuck her, even though she's dead. So, I don't know. So, to me, again, big issue with it. Totally, yeah, absolutely, like, pointless, absolutely pointless. And what it does, actually, and this is more of a serious point, and this ties into The Devil's Rejects, is The Devil's Rejects is one of those films where, if you read positive reviews of the film, it talks about how, oh, this is about the war in Iraq, and it's talking about how, you know, you've got these characters and they're really horrible, and the police is meant to be this really good character, but then it turns out that, you know, the policeman's actually really bad, and he oversteps his boundaries as a policeman, and the policeman, he represents America, and, you know, the Firefly family, they represent the Middle East, and they represent the terrorists, and how, like, maybe America gone too far in kind of how we police it. And it's like, okay, fine. I can kind of see how Rob Zombie may have put something like that in his films. I don't think Rob Zombie is not Eli Roth. Let's put it that way. He's not consciously, I think, putting sort of social commentary in his films. He doesn't strike me as that kind of guy. He strikes me as a kind of guy who just, you know, wants to make kind of, well, I mean, fuck, like, just look at the dialogue he writes for his films. He's not interested in subtext. Let's put it that way. If it's there, it's unintentional. But if it was intentional, let's just, you know, for the sake of this ramble, let's just say that it was intentional, okay? All this shock value stuff, all the goofy humor and stuff, is completely kind of undermining whatever message that he's trying to send in his film. It just completely kills all that. So, there you go. And then, the last point I'm going to make, and this is the big point, this is the one that kind of, I think, is the main issue that I had with the film when I first watched it in 2008. And I still kind of have it to a certain extent now, although I understand that it's less of a, I don't know, you'll see what I mean when I go into it. So when I sort of first started watching films more regularly in 2008, I had a very kind of black and white way of looking at films. So in horror films, you had to have good characters and you had to have bad characters. But as we've already established, House of the Thousand Corpses, Rob Zombie put in characters who are meant to be your kind of goody two shoes normal protagonists, and he clearly did not give a fuck about those characters. He gave them no depth. He didn't really give them a lot to go by, you know, in terms of substance. He didn't really give the antagonists any substance either, but he at least gave them cool lines and he clearly liked them. His sympathies clearly lied with them. So what he's done in this film is he's kind of done in a similar way to something like Maniac Cop 2, which does a very similar thing in that the antagonist from the first film becomes the protagonist in the sequel. What he's done is he's kind of understood, okay, well, people like Captain Spaulding and people like Otis and some people like Baby, so we'll make them the protagonists of this film. Okay, that's fine. That's sort of an interesting idea. But then what you do is, even though we kind of understand, yes, they are murderers, they've killed lots of innocent people, we still kind of want to root for them because we kind of find them interesting characters. Or, well, interesting is maybe not the right word, but we like them. We think they're cool. So we would like to see a film with them in it. But then what you do is, because they are kind of murderers, we then have like the long sort of 20 or 30 minute sequence in the middle of the film where Otis and Baby basically, you know, they harass and they antagonize and they do some really terrible things and they kill these innocent people who have done nothing wrong, by the way. These people, they're not even annoying people. We're not in slasher film territory where we've got characters who we want to see die. These people have done nothing wrong to deserve death. Okay, they're just sort of going about their day. They're just, you know, between shows, shall we say. And then, yeah, all this horrible shit happens to them for no reason. And I found that very, very difficult to kind of reconcile, I think is the right word to use here. Because then, halfway into the film, we then have to like these characters. And we have to, you know, find them cool. We have to want to support them and kind of stuff like that. When the sheriff, who, as I said, has then crossed his boundaries and then starts torturing them, etc., you know, doing all that stuff, we then have to kind of want these people to survive when they're really horrible people. Now, I should stress that Captain Spaulding doesn't really do anything horrible. He doesn't kill any people. He's a fun character, and he's the best character in the film because Sid Haig is awesome. So that's cool. Otis, though, total psychopath. He's total psychopath. I think Rob Zombie likes Charles Manson. He does. He directly sort of talks about at the start of House of a Thousand Corpses, oh, the Manson family chicks are really hot, aren't they? So he clearly has sympathies for Charles Manson. It's undeniable. And Otis is clearly meant to be like a Charles Manson cipher. So already, he's not in any way likable. And he's grumpy and he fucking argues all the time. And Baby, you know, she was annoying in the first film, but she wasn't a total psychopath. Whereas in this film, she's total psychopath. Again, not really all that likable. So what this film lacks, and I'm going to quote, it's the only time really that I'm going to quote a review from The Outer Rim. It's quite a long review, but it's very interesting. I'm not going to quote it all, but it's by a user called David R. Gowan on Letterboxd. And what it says is, and I quote, "There's a term in screenwriting called saving the cat, which refers to the practice of giving the protagonist a scene in which they do something good that makes us want to root for them, regardless of where their journey takes them. By having the main character of the story save the metaphorical cat, they are redeemed in some way and become more likable in the eyes of the audience. The Devil's Rejects makes no such attempt," which is true. And in the review, he kind of goes into kind of all these different examples, and he quotes, you know, Clockwork Orange and Buffalo 66 and other stuff like that, where the protagonist is deeply unlikable and they're not really sympathetic and they do horrible things, but you gain sympathy for them as the film goes on, and they are successful attempts to do that. And you're given reasons why you are meant to feel sympathy for these characters. In The Devil's Rejects, you are not given a reason to like these characters. they torture this random group of people and kill them and do these horrible things. And then it's just a case of, well, they have a bit of a laugh with each other and, you know, they all get on really well and they're like a family. And it's like, we're just meant to like them because they're cool, I guess, is what we're meant to kind of get from this. I don't really know. It's very, yeah, it's a problem. It's a massive problem. And it also ties into what I mentioned earlier about Rob Zombie not really understanding exploitation films from the 70s. And it's something that's come post slasher films, where in the first film, let's say, of, you know, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, whatever, you've got a clear sort of antagonist, protagonist. But then it becomes clear that people, they really care more about the antagonist. Like, they're the ones that kind of are the drawing power of these films. Then we're not interested in sort of the people who are fighting them. But they still have to work as movies. So you still have to put a protagonist in there who's likable. And you still have to keep the antagonist kind of unlikable for the film to work. Otherwise, it's just a bit pointless, really. So yeah, even though when you watch a Friday the 13th film, you're not really interested in sort of the people who are fighting Jason. You only really care about Jason, but Jason still has to be the antagonist for the film to work. In films in the 70s, so Texas Chainsaw Massacre, for instance, like Leatherface, he's the antagonist. His family are the antagonists of that film. Marilyn Burns' character is the protagonist. So even though, like, oh, isn't Leatherface really cool? No. What you're meant to get out of that, and the reason that that film works so well, is you have your sympathies with Marilyn Burns. And it's the same with The Hills Have Eyes, and it's the same with, you know, Last House on the Left and stuff like that. Even though, okay, well, the antagonists, they look cool and, like, you know, they're the ones who, yes, they are more memorable, but they're not the people in the film who we're meant to have our sympathies with. And Kim Newman in Nightmare Movies, he has this quote that I don't have in front of me, but it's very appropriate for a film like this, where in these movies in the 70s, the underlying message of these films was that the world is shit. In a nutshell. Whereas in films like this and Hostel and to a certain extent Saw and all these other kind of torture porny type films, is that people are shit. So it doesn't matter if you're the antagonist or the protagonist, you're still shit. Now, admittedly, what I would say about this, and this is kind of not really a justification of this, but with something like Hostel, the protagonists in Hostel, they're unlikable, and they're meant to be unlikable, but it's insincere. So they're crass and they're horn dogs and all the stuff that I said in the last episode. But horrible things happen to them, and Jay Hernandez's character, Paxton, like, he's meant to be redeemed because, you know, he escapes and he could just drive away, but he decides to go back and save that Japanese woman who's had her eye sort of burned out. So that's fine. That's meant to redeem him in some way. So, I don't know, it feels very insincere to me. Whereas, at least with this film, what I'll say is, like, these characters are not meant to be good people. At no point in the film are they presented as good people. They're always presented consistently as pretty horrible people who are mass murderers and all this kind of stuff. And the film never really shies away from that. So, in that regard, as long as you can kind of accept these characters for who they are, you know, at least Rob Zombie is being sincere with that, as opposed to Eli Roth, who's not being sincere at all. So, they are horrible people, but again, you kind of have to go with it. Does that make it right? No. There's no point in the film where suddenly we kind of understand these characters and have a deeper kind of sympathy for them. They're horrible, but then it turns out they're actually, oh, they're kind of funny and they have funny arguments with each other and all that kind of stuff. And then, oh, the sheriff is worse. Although, is he actually worse? Because that's another thing that I've read up about this film is, like, well, you know, the sheriff, it's like, he's just upset his brother died. And, yeah, he kills the mother, who, by the way, gives a very over-the-top performance. So that character in both House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects is just overacted to oblivion. Like, Karen Black, I don't know what she's doing in House of a Thousand Corpses. It's just like, go there and be a sort of like, pretend you're in a Tennessee Williams play or something like that. That level of kind of overacting, overwrought sort of like older woman sexuality type thing. Whereas in this, new actress they got in to play that character is just overacting to an absurd degree. Lots of sort of tongue wagging and like, all that kind of stuff. It's just all very, all very, very weird. But yeah, anyway, the sheriff, he strangles her to death because she killed his brother and he doesn't like that for obvious reasons. And I don't know, it's all very, very murky. It's all very, very murky. So those are the charges that are levied against Rob Zombie. I think most of them are fair. The only one that I sort of have a bit of umbrage with, I would say, is the one about casting. But it is what it is. I think with Rob Zombie, he's one of these directors where, you know, if you like his films, then great. If you don't like his films, I totally understand why. And they are hard to love in a lot of ways. Well, as I'll go into in a sec, the ones that I tend to like are the ones that are less sort of people shouting at each other and hillbillies and all that kind of stuff and more kind of atmospheric. But I would say that The Devil's Rejects is his most highly regarded film for a reason. And for his style that he prefers, I think it's the best representation of it for reasons that I mentioned earlier. But, and this is the key question that we ask in every single one of these shows, how bad is it? So is it a good date movie? Is it not that bad, bad, very bad, or the worst? So it's definitely not the worst. I would say that this is not that violent. It has violence in it, particularly in the last sort of 25 minutes of the film, where you've got people getting nails kind of hammered through their hands and people getting shot with cattle prods and, you know, people getting photos stapled to them and stuff like that. I would say, okay, fair enough, that's kind of gory. And then you've got the woman being hit by the truck and all her insides kind of splayed out all over the road. But other than that, the film is not very gory. If you watch some of Rob Zombie's later films, they are much more gory. Even, like, Halloween is gorier than The Devil's Rejects. And more violent, by the way. The only stuff that is upsetting is the scene in the motel room with Otis sort of running his gun over certain parts of a woman's body and kind of forcing her to kiss him and stuff like that, which is really unpleasant. And that in itself is really not that nice. But other than that, I didn't find that there was anything in the film that was the kind of thing that's going to make you want to throw up and not watch it. There's nothing disreputable in the film. It's not a good date movie. I certainly wouldn't recommend it for a date. I wouldn't even say it's a bad date movie. I would say it's on the high end of not that bad, as opposed to full on bad. So that's what I think about The Devil's Rejects. I suppose at this point it makes sense for me to talk about the other films in Rob Zombie's back catalogue after The Devil's Rejects. I've talked about all these films throughout the show, but I thought I would kind of sum up kind of my thoughts on them very quickly before we wrap up. So after Devil's Rejects, the first thing he did, like Eli Roth, was submit a mock trailer to Grindhouse, the Quentin Tarantino Robert Rodriguez collaboration. His one is Werewolf Women of the SS, which is basically a kind of Nazi exploitation homage, which is very kind of, I guess, accurate, if you want to call it that, to Nazi exploitation films that were released in the 70s in Italy. Two things that kind of stand out to me. First of all, it's got Udo Kier in it, which is always a bonus. Love Udo Kier. Anything with him in, automatically better for it. But not only does it have Udo Kier, it's got Nicolas Cage as Fu Manchu, which is awesome. And if Rob Zombie ever decides to make Werewolf Women of the SS as a full-length film, he has to include Nicolas Cage in it as Fu Manchu. The man is unbelievably awesome in it. Same year, as that, 2007, he makes his most well-known film, which is the Halloween remake. Now, there's a lot of things written about the Halloween remake. Some of it good, some of it not so good. One of the things that I would say about it is I have a lot of respect for Rob Zombie for making a Rob Zombie film. He didn't do like a Platinum Dunes and make it as kind of bland and boring as possible. Just look at the Nightmare on Elm Street remake. I mean, God, awful film that is. So it's not that. For better or worse, he made a Rob Zombie film. Now, it's mostly a Rob Zombie film at the start because, as everyone listening to this probably knows, what he wanted to do was he wanted to give Michael Myers his backstory and show you kind of how he became the person he is. Now, in the original, it's just shown in a quick flashback and we don't know. He just is that character straight away. We don't actually see how he became that. And in this, he's got this whole backstory. One of the things I'll say about this film is if you can make it past the first 5 minutes, all the things that get lobbied against Rob Zombie in terms of, you know, characters saying fuck every 2 seconds and them being white trash, literally that is the first 5 minutes of this film. It's just horrendous. It's, I think, the worst part of the film, which is unfortunate because, as I said, it's right at the start. It's kind of an interesting idea. One of the things I would say about the whole story is if it wasn't Halloween, so if it was an original idea by Rob Zombie where you had this, you know, little boy who's clearly mentally disturbed and he ends up going to this mental institution and he escapes and then he starts killing people again as an adult, you know, like what happens in the film, I think it might have been received slightly better. I think because it is a remake and there's all these sequels that you've got to take into consideration as well, then, yeah, it just becomes a bit of an issue, like I said. This film also has Udo Kier in it, incidentally. So, as I said, always a good thing. So, yeah, can't really complain about that. It's obviously nowhere near as good as the original, but it was never going to be. Rob Zombie was kind of on a bit of a hiding to nothing with this one. Like, it's too different for people who love the original, and after the halfway point, it kind of sticks too closely to the story beats of the original. So he's kind of caught between a rock and a hard place, as I said, in that one. But it's been sort of almost retconned out of history. Like, the David Gordon Green film from a couple of years ago is much closer to, like, the original sort of film in terms of its style, like how it was shot and kind of tone and things like that. And which is, I don't know, kind of a shame in a way, because it's not Zombie's worst film by any stretch of the imagination. It's all right. It's, I mean, God, compared to a lot of the remakes that came out at this time, it's actually one of the better ones for all its faults. So, yeah, think about that. God. And then a couple of years later, obviously, he made the sequel, because Halloween, when you remake a film called Halloween, it's going to do very well at the box office, and it did, which justified making a second one. So unlike the first film, where, as I said, he kind of had to follow certain aspects of the original film, he could basically do his own thing with this one, and he did. And it was not very well received, both by critics or at the box office. I mean, it was never going to be well received by critics, but I think because it doesn't follow your standard sort of slasher film formula, I think people were really, really upset. So the idea behind this film is actually quite interesting as a concept. So when you obviously watch these slasher films, these characters, the final girl in particular, they go through this horrific ordeal where, you know, this normally a man is trying to kill them for a whole film, and then they have to then kill them. Obviously, they've never killed a person before, you know, so this causes them to have like PTSD like symptoms, and this is what happens to Laurie Strode in this. So the first kind of 30 minutes or so of the film is basically a nightmare that she has, which is a bit of a cheap trick, to be honest, to pull, where, oh, okay, it's not actually happened. And that's actually the most slashery part of the film as well. So pulls the rug out from under us as an audience right away. So anyway, she's got PTSD. She shouts a lot. She's quite angry. Michael Myers, not dead, despite the fact he got shot in the head in the previous film. He is no longer dead. He is now basically a hoodie-wearing man who kills hillbillies sort of in the farming community outside of Haddonfield. Dr. Loomis, in these films played by Malcolm McDowell, incidentally, I don't think he's anywhere near as good as Donald Pleasance was. Donald Pleasance had a certain gravitas to his performance where it didn't matter what he was saying. He said it with such grave sincerity that you believed what he was saying, and he had a lot of emotional impact as a character. Malcolm McDowell, although he's good at certain things, he's not good in that way. Anyway, irrespective of all that, he is now basically trying to sell a book, and he's got a publicist and things like that, and he's basically a sellout. And those aspects of the film kind of don't really work, basically. Yeah, I think a lot of the issues with this film come from the fact the film isn't really very focused. And again, like I said earlier on, the film is way too long. It's about 2 hours long for what is essentially about three stories going on at the same time, not really going anywhere, and quite slow. And there's also the surreal elements that a lot of people have issues with. So even though... So Sherry Moon Zombie plays Michael Myers' mum, and she commits suicide 30 minutes into the first film, but he still manages to have her appear in this in sort of these weird kind of surreal dreamlike sequences where she's wearing white and she's on a white horse. And I think that's meant to be Freudian or something like that. I don't know. It kind of went over a lot of people's heads. I don't mind those elements. I, as anyone who's listened to this show for a while will know, I am a huge fan of like David Lynch and directors like that. So I like surreal imagery. That kind of stuff, you know, is like catnip for me. So I thought it was pretty awesome, but yeah, again, didn't really work for a lot of people. And it made less than half at the box office of what the first film made. I think they were supposed to do another sequel and it just never came to pass. And yeah, this film has basically kind of, again, been forgotten in sort of horror history, which is sort of a shame because, like I said, it's not the worst thing that Rob Zombie's done. It's actually probably his most underrated film by far in a lot of ways. But yeah, unfortunately, like I said, didn't really work. Same year, 2009, he made an animated film, all him. So he wrote it, he directed it, based on a comic book that he made called The Haunted World of El Super Beasto. And oh boy, I hated this film. I hated this film a lot. I think this is by far the worst thing that he's ever done, even worse than 31. This film is so bad. This film is so boring for a 77-minute film. Literally, it's... oh, God. I don't want to waste too much time on this one, but it's so stupid. It's, like, one of the stupidest things that I've ever seen. It's literally, like, Beavis and Butthead levels of kind of infantile. But when I say that, I mean it's the kind of thing that Beavis and Butthead would like in Beavis and Butthead itself. So it's just... I don't know if the whole thing's meant to be ironic and I'm missing the point somewhat, but yeah, it just really didn't work for me. If you were a 13-year-old boy, you find puerile humour and again, men talking about their penises and masturbation and kind of women with huge fake cartoon tits and things like that. If you are entertained by that, then fair enough, you are a better man than me. But yeah, I just thought this was shit. And by the way, also, another thing. So this is the man, like I said, who did the hallucination sequence in Beavis and Butthead Do America. The animation in this looks fucking shit. It's so bad. It looks like Ren and Stimpy. Like, there are elements when they do, like, close-ups on characters, like, body parts, and they're all hairy and pimply and stuff like that, and it's like, okay, that kind of works in Ren and Stimpy, but it really doesn't work in this. It's just, it's fucking shit. I really hated it. And then 2012 comes along and we got Lords of Salem. Now, Lords of Salem is the outlier in the Rob Zombie filmography. This and sort of House of the Thousand Corpses demonstrates that Rob Zombie is actually capable of making a somewhat normal horror film with atmosphere and regular characters who aren't violent hillbillies in. So this one is very much in the vein of Roman Polanski, so something like The Tenant or Repulsion or Rosemary's Baby. I think it's very heavily influenced by Rosemary's Baby. He says it's The Shining if it was directed by Ken Russell. And yes, there are huge Ken Russell-like sections in it, particularly like the last 10 minutes. And it's kind of like The Shining, I guess. I mean, basically, like, you know, those touch points are very, very obvious when you watch it. And it's actually a pretty good film. I'm not going to say it's great. It's not the best thing I've ever seen in my life. Some of it is pretty lazy. Like, there's a lot of exposition. Like, there's a character who appears about 30 minutes into the film whose job seems to be just to read different books and talk to different people about Salem and kind of, oh, who was this person? Who was this witch? Who was this person? Etc. That type of thing. So that seems to be his only responsibility in the film. And then he dies. And there's some stupid things in there as well. Like, the main character is obviously played by Sherry Moon Zombie, although at this point, as I said, she's actually not too bad. She's not obviously a great actress. I don't think she's ever going to be, but she was all right as the main character in this. I think she's actually okay when she's not being asked to overact and things like that. There's a scene where she's at a church and black goo starts coming out of the reverend's mouth and it looks very silly, and there's sort of shit kind of insidious level kind of like jump scares in there which don't really work for me. But I think this would have been a really, really good direction for Rob Zombie to go down if he chose to. Unfortunately, the film didn't cost a lot of money. It only cost something like $1.5 million, but it only made about, yeah, the same. I think it made literally the same amount of money as that. So, unfortunately, it was not a financial success. So, as a result, it feels like he kind of went back to the drawing board and kind of tried to do something that he felt was closer to what his fans, in inverted commas, wanted him to do. And he made, as a result, 31. Now, 31, one of the things that people know about it is it was partially crowdfunded, so people could pay to fund the movie, and as a result, they would appear in the movie in background scenes and things like that, which kind of shows you, like, you know, say this is a guy who not even 10 years earlier had directed the remake of Halloween, and now he's basically having to get people to pay for his movie, which is a bit of a shame. That being said, though, the movie that they paid for is not very good. It's a piece of shit. And that's, yeah, putting it mildly. So what I will say about 31 is if you got someone who hated Rob Zombie to make a film that was basically parodying Rob Zombie and his films, this is the film that they would make, or something very, very close to it. So it's got all the stuff in it that basically people hated about, let's say, The Devil's Rejects, for example, where, again, you've got loads of hillbillies, they swear all the time, they constantly talk about their dicks, that people say stuff for shock value. It's ugly looking. Of all the films that Rob Zombie's made, this is by far the worst looking. A lot of it is dark. The editing is absolutely horrendous. There are parts of this film that are incomprehensible, and you cannot tell at all what the fuck is going on. Like, at the start of the film, there's this van with, I think, like 8 or 10 characters in it, and then some of them get killed, but it's not clear who gets killed until after the other characters are then forced into this game, and then it becomes basically like The Running Man, but shit. And you've got Malcolm McDowell in it again, looking like he's come from Amadeus. He just looks fucking ridiculous. It's just awful. And then, basically, instead of having, like, Dynamo or someone like that from a Running Man, you've got these characters who are, like, called Sickhead or Schizohead or Doomhead or Deathhead, when they should really be called Fuckhead or Shithead or Dickhead. Something like that. It's just absolutely awful. Awful, awful, awful. It's just ridiculous. It's a lot of just gore And the gore effects, as I said, you can't see them properly because of the editing. And you've got this character, Doomhead, who is clearly sort of the cipher for, like, Rob Zombie, because he gives him, like, this really long monologue. He gives him all the best lines in the film. And in fairness, Richard Brake does deliver them really well, but it just feels very sadistic for almost no reason. And there's a lot of stuff in it, like I said, just for shock value. So one of the characters, this character, Sickhead, is a little person who's Latino, and he's dressed as like an SS officer. And there's all this Nazi paraphernalia like all over the place when kind of he's on screen and stuff like that. And oh yeah, and some of the stuff the characters say, like they've got chainsaws, that's another kind of thing, like, you know, let's rip off a Texas Chainsaw Massacre some more. And the ending, by the way, fuck knows why you would want to see 31, I don't know, but to kind of spoil the ending, they try to do a very similar ending to this from The Devil's Rejects, but it didn't really work, because guess what? I didn't care. Also, this film's far too long. Far, far too long. So, yeah, bad film. Don't recommend it whatsoever. And that film, you know, as I said, unfortunately, didn't cost a lot of money to make, didn't take a lot of money in the box office either. It took, I think, less than $1 million at the box office, which is not a good sign. So then, I guess, final kind of throw of the dice, Rob Zombie made a sequel to The Devil's Rejects. This is the third film in the Firefly trilogy, which is Free From Hell, which was released a couple of years ago, 2019. So even though Otis and Captain Spaulding and Baby got shot probably like a million times at the end of The Devil's Rejects, and you would assume that they are dead, they are in fact not dead. They just were on the verge of dying, and by like a million to one chance, they all managed to survive. And it's just sad. It's just a really, really sad film. Essentially, the first 10 minutes of the film, nothing really happens. It's just exposition. Sid Haig unfortunately passed away when the film was being made. He appears right near the start of the film looking very old and frail, it has to be said, not looking good. So wasn't really a surprise when he passed away when he did. Bill Moseley also looks old. I think Bill Moseley's like 70 and he's having to kind of do the whole Otis thing again. And like, you know, no offense to Bill Moseley. I mean, he's, you know, an iconic horror actor or anything like that. But I mean, the guy's too old to play that character with the same intensity that he had in The Devil's Rejects. And yeah, so they had to bring Richard Brake in to basically play like another member of the Firefly family randomly. The film is very ponderous. One of the things that I've said about Devil's Rejects is it's got an energy to it. So even though it's like nearly 2 hours long, it doesn't feel boring because there's always something happening. And also, you've got the Sheriff Wydell character to also give the other side of the story. So you don't have to keep the story constantly on the Firefly family, so it can kind of jump back and forth. There isn't any characters like that in this. So you're basically with the Firefly family for the whole film. He tries to do the Devil's Reject story again, so they hold this warden and his family hostage, and then obviously they kill them, trying to break out Baby out of prison. They get Baby out of prison, they kind of go on the run, they end up going to Mexico, and they kill Danny Trejo's character from the Devil's Rejects because he's in prison with Otis and he kills him. I don't know, it's all very kind of fan servicey type thing. Didn't bring back Diamond Dallas Page, unfortunately. That would have amused me. But yeah, anyway, so I don't know. There isn't really a lot I can really say about this. Like, it's not a bad film as such. It's not embarrassing. It just feels very kind of pointless and directionless. Like, I think it's meant to feel like The Wild Bunch, or it's meant to feel like Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia, because about half the film is set in Mexico, and like the last 20 or 30 minutes is just them killing various Mexican guys in like lucha libre masks and stuff like that. I don't know, it's just not a very interesting film to me. And unfortunately, they have left it open for another sequel, so don't be surprised if there's another Firefly film after this. Wouldn't surprise me. But yeah. And if you're curious as to what Rob Zombie's next film's going to be, so let's take a step back. So his best film, most people will agree, is The Devil's Rejects. That came out in 2005. His most financially successful film, Halloween, came out in 2007. So basically, he's made four or five films, depending on how you look at it, that either didn't make money or were just not successful, you know, in terms of how fans view them and things like that. So his next film that he announced this week on Instagram, believe it or not, is he's going to do a film of the Munsters. Now, this is interesting because he could do it in several different ways. He could obviously do it kind of like for like. So it would be like he made like a family film like Eli Roth did with A House with a Clock in Its Walls. So Rob Zombie doing a family film, that could be different, I guess. Might kind of get rid of a lot of his bad habits in terms of language and stuff like that. Or he could just do like a grungy kind of exploitation monsters film, which will probably not do very well. But who knows? We'll have to wait and see. Literally, it's only been announced. The only things that we know about it so far is that he's cast his wife in it, because of course he has. And it's also got Jeffrey Daniel Phillips in it. Because, again, he likes using a lot of the same actors, and he's used him since Halloween 2. So why is that a surprise? So that's what he's going to do next. Unfortunately, unlike, you know, Eli Roth, who made a series of bad films, but then, you know, his last film was financially successful, he's not made a financially successful film. But what I would say about Rob Zombie is, in a way, it almost doesn't matter, because Rob Zombie can just keep making music, and that is his primary job. That's what he's most known for. So I suppose he's always going to keep making movies until he decides not to. It's not as if, you know, he's reliant on kind of box office success to kind of keep going. He's always just going to do it, because I think he loves making horror films, and you know what, fair play to him. I've not liked most of his films. I think some of them are more interesting than others. I think, you know, I would have liked him to have carried on in the same vein as Lords of Salem, but you know, he didn't for whatever reason. But if he wants to continue making films, you know, I'm sure people like me will continue to see them, because he's a very prominent director. He has a lot of infamy for one reason or another, be it deserved or not, as this episode has demonstrated. So that is the end of my Lionsgate trilogy. I hope you've enjoyed this one. This one's a little bit more, as I said at the start, of a rambly kind of freeform type episode. I haven't really structured this one too much in terms of what I was going to say. So I hope it wasn't too long-winded. Who knows? With me, you never know. In terms of what's coming on the next show, so anyone who's been thinking, hang on, these last three films, they're not the worst date movies ever. What are you talking about? This is false advertising, Greg, you motherfucker. What's wrong with you? Well, you're not going to have that problem on the next show, because on the next show, I'm going to be talking about one of the most infamous films in, I think, the history of French cinema, by a director who is the enfant terrible, shall we say, of French cinema. It's a film from 2002. Not going to spoil it, but it should be pretty obvious what it is. And yeah, I will see you on the very, very next show. Tutti fucking fruity, everybody. Thank you for listening. If you want to follow me on social media, you can at Worst Date Movies Ever. And don't forget to click subscribe wherever you're listening to this right now to never miss another episode of Worst Date Movies Ever.